Well, it kind of brings up a bigger question for me, and we can discuss it, is, you know, we talk about this on the pod, it's kind of the central question of everything we discuss. What is value, right? What is something worth, right? Like a lot of things, we talk about crypto, we talk about AI, we talk about all these different things. That's why I do kind of love the meme stocks and the meme coins, just as an idea, because I'm like, look, everything is a story. Yeah, some of them have more solid foundations, right? A brownstone in Brooklyn, you can live in it, you can rent it out. And a house in the Hamptons, you can rent it out, you can live there as well. A meme stock, you're not getting any value at all. So it's that idea of intrinsic, extrinsic values or whatever, right? So to me, all of this, I respect the fact that someone could say, okay, I'm going to trade this for X amount of time. It's a meme stock. It has high viral, potential because it's on Reddit. People want to mess around with it. There's a story there. So I respect that. But just as a pure company, look, are we in a world now where these valuations are just not making any sense at all? And, you know, you kind of have to filter things as, oh, this is actual real stocks or real estate. And then this is just memes, basically. All right, welcome to another episode of No Investment Advice. We've got Trung Phan, Meme Master Flex himself, Bill Alzady, and unfortunately, Jack can't join today. Trung, you're laughing because I had to bring back the Meme Master Flex. That's the OG intro. I know, man.
Can you actually hit it? Can you actually hit the meme of the week? You
guys. Oh, yeah, let's do it. Meme Master Flex. There we go. I don't know. Did you share this? Was Jack? I think Jack shared this one. 1 minute. Sharing my screen right here. All right, this is meme of the week here. We've all been through it in the last few weeks. We've talked a lot about meme stocks, but this is meme stocks and meme coin investing. Can you see that, Trung?
Yeah.
There we go. The four stages of meme coin investing. This is Hello, I'm That Dude. I mean, do you want to explain the four stills here for people listening, Trung?
Yeah, it's so well done. It's just images of Leonardo DiCaprio and his various roles. First stage,
number one,
is him of Wolf of Wall Street. As a new intern, second
serious.
Serious. Second image.
Look at that. Oh wait,
it's later
this,
in the
order. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. You skips. No, you gotta get rid of that, bro. Go back.
No, I think it was
No. Okay, dude. Hey, no. They're doing it wrong. Stop.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm just gonna read it
Sorry.
Through.
It should be the bottom one, right?
Yeah, it's him celebrating right. From the Great Gatsby.
There we go.
And then it's him. Completely losing his mind in Wolf of Wall Street on the K-ludes, the ludes.
Oh my God.
And then last one is The Remnant, when he had to sleep in a bear.
Yeah, yeah.
The best part of that movie is he had to sleep in a bear to win an Oscar.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, we all been through it in the last few weeks. I mean, there was another meme where it was the stages, you know, the psychology of investing or whatever, and it's like euphoria, all that stuff. But normally that's over several years. This is over every 4 hours. You're just basically going through the whole thing. Oh my God, incredible. Oh, but anyway, so today we've covered a lot of crypto stuff in the last few weeks. So we're going to mix it up a little bit today.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Boeing, Donald J. Trump. He's back at it again with the DJT ticker, a SPAC that is pumping his own bags here. So we're going to talk about that, and combined with that, kind of related, is Reddit. I mean, the Reddit IPO obviously happened. They're up crazy. I think it was up 30% yesterday or something like that. Obviously the home
it's
of meme stocks.
It's up another 15 today. So this is Tuesday morning for people.
This is that crypto level pumping on a public company, where obviously Wall Street Bet started on Reddit. It was a big part of that whole era. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Then we'll talk about Apple's anti-case trust. And if we get to it, the Kate Middleton UK media scandal. Why don't we start off with Boeing? I mean, obviously, we've all seen, you know, the sad stories of the planes malfunctioning and people getting in trouble with that. But also the CEO has just stepped down, right? Finally?
CEO stepped down. He announced that he will be leaving the company in a year. They're starting a CEO replacement search. And I think we haven't really talked about Boeing a lot here, because obviously this is more of a quote-unquote air quotes edge of the internet type show. But the Boeing stuff is super interesting because it's timely, because I just drove down to Seattle. I was in Seattle for the last 48 hours, and that's what I'm wearing. Bilal, check it out.
Oh, killing it. Supersonics.
Seattle Supersonics hat.
Wait, what were you doing in Seattle?
Took my son there. for nice. A little rendezvous. You know, he's on spring break, so we got to take him to do stuff. That was one of our trips.
Some with the chicken pot pie for the road. You had that last week. Yeah,
bro, I mean...
that intro is great.
People had a good laugh about that. And even the parents on this pod, or the listeners to the pod, they know the drill. It's like, spring break sneaks up on you because you know about summer. You know for 3 months of summer, you gotta keep your kid entertained. But spring break, like you just came back from Christmas break. You're not expecting... that you're going to have to entertain your kid again. So we got
to
entertain
him. How far is the drive from Vancouver to Seattle?
Well, it's fun. We can talk about it. It's 2 hours and about 45 minutes.
Oh, that's super close. Yeah, I didn't realize it's that close.
Do you have Nexus? Are you familiar with Nexus?
No. Oh, wait. Are you talking about the immigration?
Yeah, the border, immigration stuff.
I don't have it, but I know I've heard of it, yeah.
For people I'll tell people what Nexus is. It's a card that you applied to with the U.S. immigrations, Canadian immigrations. Obviously, so much trade happens between the two countries. I think 33% of maybe 40 to 50% of Canadian exports go to the United States, obviously. So they created this program called Nexus, which makes it very easy to cross between the countries, but it's quite an arduous process to get this Nexus card. Fair enough, right?
Yeah, enough.
If they're going to give you low...
It's like when you get global entry at the airport
global entry.
Yeah.
Identical to global entry.
I have that. That's a game changer, by the way. I can't believe I had so many years without it.
Well, let's talk about it. Yeah. What's so amazing about it? You get your own special
line. At the airport,
line.
Yeah, you come into a special line. And for me, I have a green card. So I don't even scan the green card anymore. You just walk up to the kiosk, it scans your face, and you get a little slip, and you take it to the front, and they look at you, they check your passport, and then you walk out. It's kind of like in Europe when I go back to London, if you've got e-passport similar, you just walk up to the gate, it scans your face and you don't even speak to anyone. You just walk straight through. It's pretty amazing. But yeah, when you're driving though?
No, but this is what I mean is like you nailed it. So like driving Canada to US, some border stops are brutal, right? Like a lot of the traffic happens in Ontario because of the Detroit, Ontario, like automotive connection thing. That's historically how it's been. But for this trip, it's called the Peace Arch, and that is Vancouver. It's basically an hour south of Vancouver. And then from there, it's about another 90 minutes to Seattle. Very, very near. A lot of people go to like the trade. It's near the borders of Trader Joe's. So a lot of Canadians just
roll
up
the trade. That's so funny.
Yeah. On the way back.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is the legal limit?
You get everything but the bagel seasoning.
Yeah, exactly.
You got all the special stuff.
Exactly.
Trader Joe's, have we ever done a Trader Joe's breakdown? Because they're really incredible.
Yeah, we did it. We did a series. We should do it again, man. It's so good. Yeah. But Seattle, man. Have you been to Seattle?
No, I actually haven't.
We should talk about Seattle, actually.
Definitely we'll go, though. Yeah.
Let's expand this episode. Seattle is fascinating, man. Think about the companies that have come out of Seattle.
Microsoft, Amazon, Starbucks. Anyone else?
Boeing.
Oh, that's going to lead us perfectly into it. Yeah.
Bro. Like they got.
Yeah, we have a friend. Melina's literally on the phone to her right now. A friend of ours who lives in Seattle works for Nordstrom, and like obviously a bunch of. I have a lot of friends in New York who came from Seattle, worked at Microsoft and stuff. So heard good things. Good, very livable place.
Yeah,
must be a beautiful place.
It's very nice, Pacific Northwest, and so we went. My son's obsessed with planes and space, so there's a very nice museum. Called the Museum of Flight. So William Boeing started Boeing in Seattle, in the Seattle and Washington region. I think the headquarters now are either in Chicago or South Carolina. I can't remember where it is. Let me actually see where the headquarters are. But the whole point is that the reason why we bring up the Boeing stuff is Boeing's had a bad couple of years. Right? I mean, blah, what do you remember of the last couple of years, off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you see these crazy videos of a door flying off the plane, you know, kind of like your worst nightmare stuff, right? Like you see in a movie, a door flying off, you're in the middle of the sky and there's an open air, you know, gap. And honestly, I genuinely don't know enough. I just assumed you would die. Like I just assumed like anything like that happens.
Dude, I could not, you watch these movies,
like, how
you
they
think
still
you get
flying?
Sucked out, right?
Yeah, what's
you
that famous one with airplane, what's it called?
Air Force One. Harrison Ford.
But there's also another one, Snakes on a Plane or something?
William
or?
Snipes. Well, no, Wesley Snipes.
Wesley
Passenger
Snipes.
57.
There we go. That's another
Yo,
one.
Yo, there's the greatest line in that movie, man. He goes, you ever play roulette? Never bet against, always bet on black. And you're just like, Wesley
Snipes. There we
Snipes.
Go. Oh, yeah. That is a gangster line. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Dude, so, I mean, you're right. And you mentioned earlier when you teased the piece is like, fortunately, the most recent like spate of bad news was not as bad as like, you remember the 2019 was when we remember. That was when the Boeing MAX 737, two of the planes crashed because of a software malfunction. You know that's how so insane sad, that is?
Oh my God, yeah.
That's why. It's sad, right? Because going back to like, we went to the Museum of Flight, Boeing, man, Boeing helped get NASA and America onto the moon. Like, this is their history, right? They created the greatest, the most famous jet air passenger airliner, the 737, which kind of kicked off the age of air travel for commercial air travel. So like, the history that these guys have is insane. And then just to see what happened in the last, call it, I don't know, 30 years. But here's the main thing that I would say that I want to flag. The negativity around Boeing has really gone back. People tracing it. It's like you can simplify a lot of things, but people like to say that, oh, you know, X thing at this year created this cascading effect, which led to all these negativities. But almost like across the board, you look at any media around Boeing and like what happened to Boeing, it all goes back to this massive merger they did in 1997. So give me 1 second. I'm going to pull it up here.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with this merger?
No, not really, no.
Okay, so...
I'm not saying not really. I mean, no, actually. That's the more accurate answer. That really was unnecessary. It's actually, no, I don't know at all.
Okay, so in 1997, Boeing merged with another aeronautical company called McDonnell Douglas. McDonnell, not McDonald's, right?
Okay, okay.
McDonnell Douglas. And basically what happened from there, so this was 27 years ago. And at the time, so Boeing acquired McDonnell for $14 billion. But what happened was this, Boeing is an engineering first type of institution, right? So I think it's founded in 1913 or 1960, if I remember correctly. So for 80 years, that's a reputation, right? They created 737, helped NASA get to the moon. And that's a reputation, engineering first institution. McDonnell Douglas, which I'm just butchering the name, I can't even read it correctly.
Yeah.
McDonnell Douglas, they are more of an accounting, financial, engineering type of shop. Like, you know, like how do we
play
cut
with
costs
the numbers
here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Private equity style or like wearing the hat in that building.
Exactly,
you know?
Dude. Yeah. So the mythology around this acquisition is basically like, that culture basically acquired Boeing. Like, even though Boeing was the one that like bought this company.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah.
Exactly.
It superimposed itself on it over time.
Well, that's why we're missing Jack here. You know, Jack loves the meme, right? People don't have ideas. Ideas have people. It's like that meme of like financial engineering and like, how do you squeeze costs? How do you maximize shareholder value? So that's basically what happened is like Boeing started, because remember, making an aircraft is one of the most complicated things in the entire world. Like, other than making like semiconductor chips, an aircraft manufacturing is one of the most complicated things that for commercial venture, which is why there are basically only three major, like, I mean, there's really two, right? It's Boeing and Airbus.
Boeing and Airbus, right?
Yeah. Airbus is obviously in Europe. Actually, is Airbus France and France and Germany, I believe. It's a French German. Can you check that?
Yeah,
I believe
it's
a French German connection. I can't remember if it's French German or French British. But
say headquarters in Netherlands, but
no, but like,
owner
you know,
is the French government, German government,
okay,
and
yeah,
Spanish government. That's
exactly.
Actually interesting. Yeah. So wait, owner is 10.9% French government, German government is 10.9%, Spanish government 4.1%. I
and
don't know
the
what
rest
the rest
is public.
Probably. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
You want to double check that? Can you check Airbus public? But anyways, the whole point is this. Aircraft manufacturing, insane, right? So like, there are like, if you can reach that level, for example, China has been trying to spend the past 2 decades becoming a primary aircraft manufacturer because they know for national defense, like they need to do that. So their national project is called COMAC. and they've subsidized the shit out of it. It just hasn't been able to produce at the level of a Boeing Airbus. Another one is Embraer in Brazil. Embraer, I'm pronouncing it wrong. Canada has a large one, but Canada is so close to the United States that they're kind of connected. But anyways, Boeing, there's a million parts to make an airplane. A lot of it is typically when Boeing started, 60s, 70s, started the commercial passenger revolution, Boeing would assemble a lot of those pieces and create a lot of the manufacturing pieces, right? But what's, Blau, what do you do in when you want to save money? You outsource, right?
Yeah.
So Boeing, post-97, starts outsourcing so many things. So that famous photo that we saw a couple months ago where that door came out, where Bilal's like, man, I've been watching movies. When the door's out, like, how do you even survive, right? So what that was it's supposed to be, that was a plugged door. It wasn't even a door. Some airplanes had these extra spaces for doors. That one was literally just supposed to be a plugged piece of metal that held that in place. So the company that does that used to be owned by Boeing, but Boeing spun that out separately as part of this cost-saving mechanism, right? Or like to make their operation look more lean and efficient. And, you know, from 1997, you can look at the stock price of Boeing, but the whole point is that when people say that the stock market or some stock market operators are short-sighted, or if you only maximize shareholder value, it's short-sighted. This is an example of that. So you spin off internal manufacturing and operational parts of your business. So it makes your business look lean, which is all positive for shareholders. But that's why two decades later, you lose quality control of the business, right? And that's bad for shareholder value. So that's one of these ideas of like, you have a short-term win, but a huge long-term loss. And I think Boeing, over the past decade, has underperformed the S&P by like 6 or 7% a year, which is insane, right? That's a very poor performing stock.
Well, and Trunk, I was going to ask really quickly on that, because you mentioned earlier, you said that's the reason why there's only two real players.
Yeah.
How much of it is what you were saying there, you know, how difficult it is, et cetera. Obviously, very capital intensive. There's a lot of kind of moats in that regard. There's also, you know, the contracts that they have. There's only so many contracts to go around, sort of thing. And there's a lot of regulation, obviously. But how much of it is that versus like it being a protected industry and the kind of inefficiencies that come with that, do you think? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot, like the same way here, the way the healthcare system works in the US with the, you know, insurance companies and all the kind of finagling you get with that sort of system. How much of that do you think is related to this? Because this, interestingly, these aren't just two US companies. This is, like you said, a European company you know, a US company as well. So I'm just curious on your take on that.
No, I mean, that's a great point. And as I kind of mentioned, the China thing is national security, right? The China wants to build its own aircraft, like powerhouse, because they understand how much national security is involved, right?
Yeah, and the importance of just transporting people around like that is
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
There's a whole area of economics called transport economics. It's literally
exactly,
about,
dude.
I did it at A level, and it was literally the impact of, you know, if you just think in a city like New York or London, if you get people to their work on time in 30 minutes versus an hour, like how much productivity for the system and wastage and missed opportunities go awry because of that stress that's added to the system.
You can literally calculate the GDP like effect, right?
Of all of those transport links. Yeah, completely. All right. So you think it's partly to do with that?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily it's part. Well, I wouldn't assign that, but I mean, of course it's very important, right? It's like they're regulated and there's a lot of talk now that the United States government is going to have to step in to do something, right? Well, they have to. It's like, Boeing is a national champion, right? And like they're manufacturing one of only two key manufacturers of aircrafts in the world. It's a duopoly. And for this to have this negative effect, because it's trickle down, right? You lose trickle down reputation. You can't have this reputational hit to American manufacturing at this high end for aerospace, which is why SpaceX is so important. Sorry, I'm burping here. Coming like SpaceX. Here's the thing, without SpaceX, like American, like aerospace looks really bad right now, right?
Yeah.
It's like you lost that cutting edge engineering first culture. So to answer your question is, I would say that the U.S. government is you're going to see something happen for sure. And it might, and this change in management will probably have a big input from the government being like, listen, we got to get back to nuts and bolts. I mean, you don't
And you need safety first, right? Like it's not like that, like you said, that CFO style focus. Well, obviously you're simplifying here, but if you think of like a direction you can go in, one is a, you know, 20 years ago, whenever that happened, okay, we need to make sure we're profitable. We need to do X, Y, Z. That's fine if you're Uber or like DoorDash, right? Like, and even then you can argue Uber, there's safety issues and obviously that is still part of the thing. But that is different. It's like, oh, for 10 years, you got VC-backed, subsidized, $3, $5 taxi rides, $10, super cheap, below cost. And then you're like, wait a minute, we're not profitable. Well, let's flip the switch and become profitable, same as Amazon. But in this case, it's like a, first and foremost, is like you said, China, for obvious reasons, see it as, well, we need this for national security and for the citizens, whatever. So it's quite an interesting example. And then, like you said, also the international perception as well, like the damage to the brand of America as well here, right? Like corporate America is being
is ruining negatively. Like such an important, like think about the, you nailed it. It's like, think about how can you allow for this national champ? And here's the thing is like, I know there's this split, and we talk about it here, is like between how much government control do you want, right? Obviously, you China is the far end. They're fully, like their relationship with COMAC, their aerospace and airplane builder, it's tight. It's like that. They're holding hands, right? Europe is between, it's in the middle.
Yeah,
France and Germany, obviously a much more state-led government, particularly France. More socialist, France. Yeah, more socialist
compared
level.
Compared to
and
the U.S.
And then America obviously wants to have the free market capital, but you can't, it's like, you nailed it. It's like, this is the far extreme where you have this Boeing Max 737 accident in 2019 and two of them, which is just, dude, think about how terrifying that is. It basically a software mistake led to the, just a crash of two planes.
Which and, is which also trunked, we should also point out that most people probably noticed listening, but the safety levels of being in an airplane compared to driving or being in a bus or train is generally speaking way safer, right?
Like orders the numbers of a magnitude. Well, the famous line is this, right? You're more likely to die on your way to the airport
than being on the plane.
Being on a flight, right? Like taking the taxi to the airport.
Yeah.
And even for everything we're saying, if you actually look at the safety records, it has been improving like remarkably. And but the thing, airplane crashes are just so salient, right?
And they're just so like in your face, right?
It's so in your face.
When you see it, you're like, oh my God. You don't see a BBC News ping when like there's a car, you know, crashed down the street. Like that happens every day.
And you know, I want to go back to your door example because the way you talked about it, that is the most salient. It's like the most visceral feeling, right? That photo of a guy taking the picture of the like that's just seared in your brain. If you actually pull like the, I think Boeing's crash record, outside of like the 737 software accidents, it's actually like pretty reasonable. And it's been going down. It's like, it's not, it's percentage wise, it's very reasonable. But it's like you said, Bilal, when it rains, it pours. Since that photo came out, every other time Boeing has an accident that has a photo, it's confirmation bias, right? And this is like now you saw these memes of people like searching for which aircraft, like they'll book a flight and they'll be like, is this a Boeing?
I definitely check when I flew back.
So you're checking?
From Europe. I just check. I mean, I don't know if I would have like gone out of my way. I don't know if I would have paid.
It's because you don't have a choice. It's
I wouldn't have paid extra probably, but if there were two flights that were the same in terms of like price and similar airlines.
Airbus.
I'd be like, okay, I don't know. Well, this was in December too, right? So this was a little bit more topical. I mean, I also remember why I remember the picture so much because it was the meme, right? It was the person saying, I'm on an airplane right now. I want to check if this would count as insider trading if I was shorting Boeing.
Oh, yeah,
right? And it was while they're on the plane. It was obviously a joke or whatever, but pretty hilarious. Also, Trung, I do want to make a callback real quick to you talking about your kid loving airplanes. As the Asian parent in you, and we're both Asian on this call, even though in America people just don't think of me as Asian, though I am.
South Asian.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm East Asian.
Part of Asia, right? So it's similar as it relates to what I'm about to say. The Asian parent in you, how happy are you that he loves planes and the engineering? Let's be honest. I know he loves Legos too. So bro, how you feeling?
Bro, I love that you have, I mean, bro. I'm on cloud nine.
Oh, isn't that the best? I mean, I don't have kids yet, but like that is a nice.
This guy,
obviously, whatever he wants to do, man, like great. But just the fact that he's into that nice little little engineering
laugh,
guy. Yeah, there we go.
I'll be like, hey, oh look, I'll show a picture of a plane. He's like, oh look, it's 737. He's like, no, dad, that's actually 747. I'm like, fist fighting.
No way,
I'm like,
that's incredible.
I'm like, bro, you know the differences.
It's like my sister. So I disagree going too much there, but my nephew just got signed up for a robotics, coding, robotics thing, and like some STEM camp, basically. And I was like, oh man, that is so good. Do you know what it is? I'll be honest. It's probably because I never, obviously I'm happy for him. Like he's genuinely into it. Obviously that's the most important thing. But as an uncle and probably as a dad, we're into technology, but neither of us are like technical people. I don't know if this is the same for you, but for me, I'm like, oh man, I wish I did that. Oh, sorry, my camera is messing up.
No, dude, I'm the same as you. It's like, I'm not, I know exactly what you're saying. It's like, I wish I was a kid I had done that. And, you know, there's nothing you can do, right? You can't look back. But to your point, what can you do? You hook up the next gen.
There we go.
So let's wrap this up with this. So yeah. Boeing is a $115 billion company now. It's down 50% in the last 5 years. So it used to be 250 about. So they're going to have a new management. They need to get back to engineering first. I don't know what that means. They got to get back to engineering first, man. It's just insane. I think some solutions that are coming on board is the company that I mentioned that they spun out. We're supposed to install that door. I think they're bringing it back in. Like they're going to reacquire it, and they're going to they got to cut this buyback bullshit out. They got to get back to grassroots, being engineering first company, put the money into research, have reserves to make these or spend some of that cash to reacquire these companies that you spun out. Listen, no more financial machinations, engineering first. TLDR.
There we go. Trung CFA hat MBA to the rescue over here.
Let me pin what you go said on. Though. Bilal, about yeah, man, there you go. You said, there's this feeling that, I wish I had been more technical when I was young. I feel the same way. But you know what? It's like we said, this is why you shove your kid into these robotics like you're supposed to do. Yeah, you just shove them in there.
All jokes out, obviously, they both clearly have a natural inclination to liking this sort of stuff. My nephew's the same, like you'll go and speak to him and he'll tell you, he'll be like, I want to play a game, and he wants to do like explain how the heart works and arteries. Oh, yeah. And he'll make us go on top of the stairs and like white blood cells are coming down to you right now. It's incredible. I'm like, wow, like he's so smart. Literally he's like making us play a role play, the whole family. It's really incredible. But and sorry, yeah, for people who are listening, my camera was malfunctioning, so I switched it now, but hopefully this works
good.
Again.
But let's jump into Duking,
as you said. Let's go to number two here. Yeah, was there anything else on
Boeing? Let me talk about Seattle a bit quickly.
Go on.
So when you do go, I'll give a quick shout out to Seattle. So I'm wearing a Supersonics hat, the famous basketball team that was taken from Seattle and moved to Oakland, the OKC Thunder. But the only thing I'll add is Space Needle, pretty cool. No, the other thing I'll add about Seattle that I really enjoyed is obviously Nirvana came from there, Jimi Hendrix. Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix both died at 27. They're both part of the 27 Club.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know what's going on there, but we should do an episode actually about Nirvana there. Man, let me ask you, are you a Nirvana fan?
No, I mean, obviously a few of the songs, but I didn't really grow up listening to it super, but obviously classic.
One day, I mean, when they blew up, we don't need to talk about it now, but just the vibe that, I know that some listeners that they grew up at that time, like for something to come out of Seattle, Washington, and like create a whole new genre of music, grunge, it was almost unheard of, right? And like, and just to flame out in 3 years, obviously, sadly, killed himself, Kurt Cobain, one of just an icon.
Legend, though, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about TJT.
All right, let's move on to the next topic here. So Donald J. Trump, this is an interesting story here. So there was a SPAC involved here. Digital World Acquisition was the original company. Digital World Corp. Combined with Trump Media or something like that. So what's been going on here? Because it's been popping up on the feeds a little bit. All I've heard high level is this has made Trump on paper like $4 billion or something wild like that.
Yeah, so it was a SPAC, and which is hilarious because the SPAC boom went up and down, right?
Yeah,
and
like throwback DWAC, to 2021, right? Yeah,
exactly. And so DWAC, which you mentioned, Digital World Acquisition Corp, was a shell company that merged with Trump Media and Technology Group, which is the funniest thing ever, by the way. It's called Trump Media and Technology Group. Dude, so...
Wait, I mean, it's the social network, no?
Truth Social. Yeah.
So technically, okay.
As of this recording, which is about 10 a.m. Pacific on Tuesday, the last ticker I saw, it'll change because basically this is like, we talk about meme stocks. We're going to talk about Reddit's post-IPO performance shortly. But I think this is a $15 billion company now. And if you want to put that in perspective, and what we were just talking about, Boeing, airline maker, $15 billion is more valuable than United Airlines. So...
Wow.
So obviously it's a meme stock, right? It's a meme stock. And we've been talking about meme coins. We've been talking about Gio Bowden, which for listeners, I got to give you a funny ass Bilal quote. Bilal's like, I'm holding this shit through the election, son.
Oh,
not investment advice.
No investment advice. But every time I say the phrase Bowden, I can't call him Biden anymore. Like I'll literally say Joe Bowden. And I texted it to Jack because there's a famous UK artist who has a line where he says Phil Foden, who's a Man City football player, and I can literally say Bowden in the same way, and I'll be in the shower just out of nowhere, just go Bowden, just Bowden. Start shouting it out of nowhere. So
it's
for
like
me, I heard that enough times. Yeah,
when
I
he's playing ball time. And you shoot Kobe,
Kobe, you just say exactly. Bowden, beautiful
dude. So I mean, this is a meme stock. That's all you need to know, right? And do you know how much money Truth Social made last year? I want you to guess.
Oh, I mean, it must be, I mean, single digit millions or something like it's.
Just give a number.
7 million.
Pretty good guess, man.
Okay.
$3.5 million.
Okay. That's
dude,
close
that's
enough.
A pretty good guess.
Yeah. I was told my inflation adjusted, you know, so. But that's what? $3.5 million revenue.
Dude, so it's trading. I'm going to F up the math here. What is it? Five is 550 is 150. It's trading at 5,000 times revenue.
Yeah. I like you said 5 times. Actually, sorry, 5,000 times.
It's a meme coin, dude.
That's
so
wild.
So, I mean, there's so many interesting pieces to this. The first part is it took forever for this SPAC to close, and it obviously did. It went public. The ticker is incredible.
DJT.
DJT. So here's a funny thing. DJT was the ticker that Trump had in the 80s. Early 90s, when he floated his hotel and casino company as a stock. But it got delisted by the NASDAQ a few years later. So he still had the ticker. This is such an incredible ticker, man, because this is not investment advice. I'm not investing in this.
Yeah, same.
I could see this thing hitting something like $50 billion, something insane.
Just because people are going to run with it through the election.
Dude, just to support him. Trump owns a third of this. So you mentioned, so he, I think he's actually owns about 40%. So at $15 billion, that's a $6 billion paper net worth.
He can't sell this. They're 6 months, right? I think.
Yeah, he has a lockup. But I mean, with those shares now, you can borrow against
secondary,
them. And like,
yeah.
I'm sure he can figure shit out to do this. But on paper, he's added about $6 billion. But this is a super thin float versus a normal stock and like not investment advice, right? And then he needs to pay for his New York court case about $175 million. Listen, all I know is this. I did a quick scan of DJT on the X feed, and it's just like, hey, I'm buying DJT out of support. It's just like, you don't understand. Like the
actually quite an interesting, if you just think as a fundraising vehicle for a politician. Because before you would give a donation, essentially, this is something you're basically going to give something away. If you were going to support him anyway, you're essentially saying, let me join this Ponzi, essentially, and say like, it's going to grow a little bit. He's going to take a bit out, pay for his court case, help him. I'm assuming he can use these funds in some way to support his own campaign eventually when there's no lockup or whatever. Either way, it's helping him. And then over time, they can, you know, take it out or whatever. But that is a really interesting. Like, this is a unique case study. Like, there's never been anything like this before.
Right. It's like, he's got the 6 month lockup, which basically takes us to the election, right? It takes us to, it's insane. The pieces that are forming now of like the US government tried to kneecap him. I mean, I don't care what you think about Trump. It's clearly a weaponization of the state against a candidate. Like it's just so obvious what's going on, right? And I don't even care. Like, I don't have a dog in either. Like, because I'm not, I mean, I'm close enough. I work with Americans, and Canada is obviously going to affect Canada. But, like, what I'm saying is the machinations that are going on here is so, this is such an interesting curveball in the election, man. And I just don't know. I don't know what's going to go on. I have no idea what's going to happen. It's just, this is just with the meme stock potential here is at Geo Bowden levels. Not investment advice.
I mean Bolden, even the tickers. Bolden versus Trump. I mean, well, because there are obviously the meme coins for Trump too. I think there's a straight Trump coin. There's a Trump coin, I think.
What are you going to do with that Trump coin? Just go to DJT if you're playing this, right?
If you're playing this
Not investment advice.
Speaking of meme coins, let's talk about Reddit. Nice transition there. You like that, Trunk? There we go. Yep. I'm looking at the chart here. I mean, it's been, what was it, a week ago this happened?
Yeah, it happened on Thursday, I believe.
So it opened at around, pulling up the chart here.
It went public at
48.
It went up 48%. It closed its first day about $7 billion. Here's the key.
So you're talking about market cap, sorry. Yeah.
Yesterday, Monday, was the first day that you could options trade.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So it was up about 30% on Monday. I think it's up another, can you check right now? I think it's up another 10% today.
I'm looking right now at the chart. It's up 8-9%. Yeah, as we're recording, you know, afternoon 1:30 Eastern time, Tuesday, March
26th. The TLDR is this.
Yeah.
It's up 100% since it went public. It's now a $10 billion plus.
I'm sharing my screen for people. So this is 5 days.
Not investment advice.
This is not the best chart. But anyway, you
kind of get the vibe. A lot of this. Here's the reality. We will not know the fundamentals of Reddit until this options trading wave kind of goes away. It's gonna take it could be a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's my best guess, not investment advice. I bet it'll drop down again. It'll just settle around 6-7 billion, which at the time people were quite optimistic on at getting listed at. So it's about 10 times revenue right now. I think it's what it's trading at, which is, I think Snap's at around 2 or 3. So like if you're going pure, like social,
this should be
a $3-4 billion company. But then they had the AI play that they're trying to play, right? They're going hard on.
My face. So I don't know if the camera's
in
my face, but
just gave like the most not, like, ooh, I yeah. Like,
ooh. No, I was okay, like, so no, Bilal. I was like, Bilal, no, this me. Is ridiculous. Well, it kind of brings up a bigger question for me, and we can discuss it is, you know, we talk about this on the pod. It's kind of the central question of everything we discuss. What is value, right? What is something worth, right? Like a lot of things, we talk about crypto, we talk about AI, we talk about all these different things. And so the interesting thing is, if you were looking at this as like a trader hat, you can, and your time horizon was a month, right? Then you can, it's the same. That's why I do kind of love the meme stocks and the meme coins just as an idea, because I'm like, look, everything is a story. Yeah, some of them have more solid foundations, right? A brownstone in Brooklyn, you can live in it, you can rent it out. And a house in the Hamptons, you can rent it out, you can live there as well. A meme stock, you're not getting any value at all. So it's that idea of extrinsic values or whatever, right? But ultimately, the value of a brownstone or a house in the Hamptons is also partially the perception of it. And the fact that the story is so lindy that people would say, oh, real estate doesn't go down. If I hold it long term, it's going to keep going up. There's a limited supply. A lot of people would hear the kind of phrases you talk about Bitcoin in that regard, gold, etc. So to me, all of this, I respect the fact that someone could say, okay, I'm going to trade this for X amount of time. It's a meme stock. It has high viral, potential because it's on Reddit. People want to mess around with it. There's a story there. So I respect that. But just as a pure company, look, I like Reddit, but like, come on, it's not worth that amount, right? Like, it's a ridiculous. that even the AI thing is like, okay, what are we doing with
their okay, so to say what the AI thing is,
yeah, they're licensing it, right? Yeah.
They licensed to Google for 200 mil.
Yeah.
About, that's the max the contract.
Which is great. Like, good for them. But still, you know, this is I mean, good for everyone involved, right? Like, good, I'm happy for them. But just, I guess the question is, like, all of these things, like, are we in a world now where these valuations are just not making any sense at all? And, you know, you kind of have to filter things as, oh, this is actual real stocks or real estate. And then this is just memes, basically. You know, and like, well, has MicroStrategy just become
Reddit's
meme
business
as well?
Is a little bit better than DJT.
That's fair. It does have users, it does have advertisers.
No,
what
I say is this.
Right.
Is there a world where Reddit can justify? I mean, justify. Everything is relative. I can, because it's not exclusive, their AI licensing deal, right? And I'll tell you what's interesting. The juggling trick they always had, Reddit, was how much can we pay the moderators? Nothing, right? How much can we give them? Nothing. And the only thing they care about is karma and social, like, digital media credit. And I will say this. It looks like that trade is working. And Jack mentioned it, right? He's like, you don't actually want to monetize your karma points. You want everything else that comes with it, right? You want the reputation. You want the digital street cred. And that's kind of, I mean, they put up the IPO, they gave about 7 to 8% of their shares to power users and moderators. I don't know how many bought in. But if you bought in, man, you 2X'd, right? So you're happy. So you did get a monetary back rub. But I think the most shares you're allowed to buy, I think you were allowed 17. I think you're allowed $20,000 to $30,000 at the top end of these to buy in the IPO. So you'd be up. Let's say you did. You'd be up 30, 40 grand right now at the top end. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think it's a $10 billion company. Just based on quote unquote fundamentals. But like you said, we are clearly removed here at a certain level. And there's enough of a narrative around AI stuff that it could be interesting to see where that goes.
Well, I think we don't have Jack on the pod today, but he's famously says this on the pod a lot, that we're selling to willing buyers at a fair market price. I mean, this is a great example of that. So, I mean, yeah, let's see how it goes. It's, you know, like I said, I'm a fan of Reddit, so good for them. But yeah, I guess the this whole idea of like, what is something worth anymore, is increasingly becoming a very blurry gray area. And I think, interestingly, crypto has really played a part in that in a way. Just the culture of, like, the volatility in crypto is insane, right? And it's open 24 hours a day. It's not like you need to wait for your 9 o'clock opening or whatever. This is Sunday, 3 a.m. You're in the trenches on, you know, Phantom Wallet buying Joe Bowden.
You're bouncing around 30 Discords.
Exactly. That's kind of why I do love it. As long as people don't, you know, as long as you know you're basically gambling, right? Like, you're in the digital casino. But similarly, here, that's the thing. It's always been like, investing is just like, you're basically gambling as well. But it's a little bit more socially acceptable. You know, obviously, that's a strong word, gambling. Like, other people would disagree with that phrase. But yeah, it's just, especially on the retail side, because you don't often really have an edge. You're really just competing with people who do have an edge most of the time. So anyway, yeah, good for people making money on it. I'm all for that. But it is a bit of an interesting take. Go on, Trunk.
Well, I love what you said, Bilal, about how crypto has normalize so much. So like, we talk about Reddit, oh, it's up 100% in a week.
Yeah.
Dude, you're like, oh, is that a joke?
I did that less than 48 hours.
I did that in like 10 minutes. It's so normal. First of all, it's normalized these massive stock moves as pedestrian, right? Like, put 100% is nothing. And then the other thing you said that made sense was super interesting. Bitcoin is a meme. That's it, right? It's like, enough people believed in it to be a $1 trillion asset. That, like, do you need a better demonstration that something can be willed into this world?
Yeah.
I mean, people, the US dollar obviously has the aircraft carriers backing it up, but still similar idea, right? It's the idea of like money, the idea of currencies is people believing in it. So Reddit, It's right in that
stored
bucket.
Stored energy trunk. That's what it is. You know?
It's like trunk, a meme. It's stored energy. But anyways, let's why don't we just end on this the Kate Middleton story.
Did you want to say anything on Apple antitrust or just a quick one, or should we skip it this week?
We've talked enough about Apple, I guess.
All right, antitrust makes me fall asleep, so let's skip it for now.
Let's skip it.
If something else comes up, do we want to talk about Kate Middleton, UK media scandal?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to put my hands up and mea culpa. I've been liking and laughing at the Kate Middleton memes for the last 3 months.
There's been a lot of stuff going on. Well, just to clarify for people who aren't following, she's now been confirmed she has some form of cancer.
Well, she's
right?
been doing chemo.
Chemo.
I believe it's either for early stage cancer or to preventative measures.
So either way, it's a serious thing. Obviously, we don't want to laugh at that.
Extremely serious. Yeah. We're not trying to the reason why, actually, when I put this on, like, I think we should talk about Kate Middleton, but I was like, why don't we skip that? But I actually want to talk about
I want to hear your
UK
angle
tabloid angle.
Yeah.
And, this is what I was interested in about this part of it, because this does deserve to get some coverage, the royals in the UK. So can you explain to people what it's like, the perception of royals? And then I'll tell you what it's like in Canada. I know we have a lot of American listeners. So can you tell me what that perception is? And what I specifically want to put is this. Kate Middleton married Prince Williams. Prince William, Meghan Markle married Prince Harry.
Yeah.
And then they know what they're signing up for. In the sense of.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. They opted in.
This is one of the
They weren't born into it. All of the rest are, yeah.
You're joining an institution, a firm, it's called, right? One of the biggest brands in the entire world. We're talking about brands. The royal family, one of the biggest brands in the entire world. So my question then
talk about Lindy. This is an old story. Yeah.
So what I'm adding is, what I want to ask is, because UK tabloid media is notorious, right? It's like infinitely worse than America. And like most famously or notoriously, they were blamed by many for Princess Diana's car crash, right? The paparazzi chasing her in France down that tunnel. And then the crash happened very sadly in 1997. I remember that. I was in elementary school because Canada, obviously, still part of the Commonwealth. We have the Queen Elizabeth. It's changed to King Charles now, but we had her on our coin for the entirety of my existence up until, I guess, 18 months ago. But it was extremely sad in Canada. I remember that, right?
So, I think globally too, right? Like
globally, because she was huge. She was a big
Yeah, she was like a global icon, yeah.
So my question to you, Bilal, is this. What expectation of privacy does the royal family even have? And how has that been treated in England? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a good question, yeah. Well, so to answer your original question, so I'll come to the privacy thing or like the expectation. I think it's to me growing up, so I can only talk from my own experience. Obviously having lived there, grown up there, but also my angle is, you know, I'm a British Pakistani guy, working middle class background, living in that area with a lot of people who were, to be very frank, very anti-royal family, right? That was kind of the growing up vibe for a lot of people I would have gone to school with. And so that's kind of what I grew up with. I was like, I never like hated the royal family, but I didn't really care that much growing up. But whereas other friends that I've now got over the years, are like, they explained to me like, well, the idea of what a royal family can be, and it's this idealistic look at what it can be for society, etc. So there was always this split between.
Hold on a second, Bilal. Let me say this. I want to dig into what you're saying here. You didn't have a negative opinion. You probably had an agnostic opinion about the royal family.
If I'm honest. I'm being honest, I was probably tiptoeing out of if 10 is really positive, 1 is bad, I'd say a 4 because from just growing up, because just up until I became an adult. Now I'm very indifferent.
Why was it a 4 out of 10?
Because you kind of, you know, especially with the being Pakistani too.
Yes.
Having that idea of the empire. And at that stage, it was a different England too, right?
Like you're one of the colonies.
Like you're like, oh, well, we were occupied by them and as Indians back then, and lots of bad stuff happened. You don't really learn in the British schools, but you do learn as a kid of immigrants, and you hear about stealing of jewels and all this like stuff that you would know probably even more than me as a historian. So that is kind of what you grew up with. But also my family in particular was kind of positive, like they loved Diana, and there's kind of a lot of comedians joke about this, like Indian American comedians will say like they literally will have a picture, their mums will have a picture of Princess Diana in the house and stuff like that.
Wait, that's a
It's a running meme.
Yeah,
and so my family did love like Diana, and actually they generally, my parents probably liked the Queen and like the royal family a little bit, whereas our generation was kind of rebelling a little bit more, and we were just kind of like anti-establishment, really, right? It was like, oh well, they're not giving us anything, we have to go fight for ourselves, we have to go find our own lane. That was like very young. Now as an adult, I grew to kind of appreciate some of the traditions, and I was like, oh, it looks kind of cool, you know. I watched the Crown, what's it called, the Crown or whatever.
it looks kind of, yeah, cool.
No, and I will say, I did some events with some of the royal family, so I kind of like met some of them, and I was like, okay, they're actually really super nice people, and I got to see the human side of some of them, and say they would be, and you know, without giving any names away or like some of the personal stuff they were saying. I remember one of them in particular was saying like, I didn't choose this and I just want to live a normal life sort of thing, right? And just, and you know, people really just think, oh, I'm so privileged, and I am, but I'm also, you know, I just want to work in tech or something, you know. That's basically what she was saying. So that's kind of like the, so that human side made me realize, oh, look, there's like regular people like anyone else. They didn't choose this. They have privileges like what we all do. Now, that was just on a personal level. Then when you kind of go into the Diana stuff, yeah, there's plenty of documentaries that you can go down a rabbit hole, and you might have, again, a bit of a negative connotation because there are like conspiracy theories and stuff about their relationship, and, you know, just some of the bad stuff that happened. For people that
don't know, she was dating one of the richest Egyptian, British.
Yeah, son of Mohammed Al-Fayed, who owned Harrods at the time and Fulham Football Club.
There's a lot of it got a bit racial.
And there's a great movie about it. And like, and even The Crown, is it The Crown, right?
The Crown covered it last season. I watched it.
In the last season. Really great episodes like that. I would recommend watching that. So that's a long way of saying it was very mixed perception of the royal family. And it really depends who you ask. And so
let me actually jump on this. Actually, I love this is what we expanded this topic.
Yeah.
So like before I ask you about the privacy question, because that's its own topic. So I'll tell you from Canada, right? Is like, again, I think similar to you. Obviously, my family is not from Canada. So like
Vietnamese,
becoming Canadian. Yeah. Right. It's like, so similar to you, you don't have this natural patriotism to the Queen or to the royal family, which, I mean, Canada didn't even get its own constitution until 1982. Okay. So that is like, that's 200 years after America. It was closely tied to the British government for almost 120 years after Canada's founding. It essentially still was hand in glove with the British government in terms of foreign policy, the way it could direct its government. So the Queen and what it represents, very close. And a similar journey I've had with you, Bilal, is like kind of negative to begin with, because obviously I'm not white, and then British family is very white, and then you don't have that same affinity. Also, the Canada was separate and far away enough, especially growing up on the West Coast of Canada, which is very different than Ontario, Quebec on the East Coast, like super immigrant heavy on the West Coast. Ontario, Quebec is where the original colonialists from France and Britain came. So the other part, though, I agree with you, which when I was listening to you, it totally ran with me. I do actually have an appreciation for it now, in the sense of, first of all, I think the Queen, she's extraordinary.
Yeah,
I think
that's a good,
you know what I mean?
The Crown does a great job of showing some of the hard things as well. There.
It's just showing like, I don't think people understand like how difficult. How insane her
How many prime ministers she was.
Prime ministers, presidents, world leaders.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty incredible.
It's just an incredible, like, and here's the thing. There's nothing that really, like in my mind, the biggest negative in my mind as a younger person of the Queen is her reaction to Diana. I always had this very, I thought that she wasn't very emotional when Diana died. And I know that they had a rift, obviously, over Prince Charles, etc. And there's always been these rumors about what the Queen thought about Diana. And that was like, that to me was the most negative I always perceived the Queen. But I want you to think about that. That's the most negative thing I have to say about the Queen. Like, she like kept the country together through different prime ministers, through different governments, through different crises, scandals, world wars, world-changing geopolitical events. She's always a rock, right? And like, the crazy thing for me about the Queen is, whatever you think about the royal family and the history of British monarchy, like, how difficult it is to be that stoic. And like, she was essentially an actor or an actress, right? She had to play that part, and she knew she had to play that part, and she did for decades. It's just like that level of grit for 70, almost, I think, nearly 70 years. It's unbelievable. It's like the self-control she had, right? So that was my respect.
Yeah, you can appreciate it. Like that, I like the way you said it. It's kind of like what I was saying as well. It's the nuanced take of, you can appreciate some things and you can criticize other things fairly. Like, and I think and actually, Trunk, sorry, did you finish? Because I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, I'm done.
I just wanted to add one last minor point to it. This is not just about the royal family for me. It was, you know, like I said, I generally don't really care that much anymore. I'd say now I'm a 6 out of 10 versus the 4 out of 10. So I've kind of switched stuff away, but I don't care enough.
I'm not going to be like, zone though.
Yeah.
You moved into
I'm not going to be out processing on the street, like be yeah. like, oh, I love the royal family, but I like whatever. But I would just say, just to give context, I didn't feel English until I left the UK. Right, and we've talked about this a little bit before. Like, I didn't really support the England football team until I was an adult. And so that's the same idea. Like, now I do. Like, I want them to win. And I realize how English I am now that I left. But the context there for people is, you don't really grow up feeling English because you're literally told you're not English. Like, when you're growing up, people will point a finger and say, you don't look like us, you're not from here, go back to where you're from, etc.
Well, like, you've experienced
that. Yeah. And it's super, you know, and because of that, you're like, well, we are different, and you kind of find your own community. And because of that, I didn't really feel like that. Versus now, it's very different, right? Like, there's, whatever you think of Rishi Sunak, there's an Indian person of Indian heritage as the Prime Minister of England. Well, the UK.
The crazy.
Mayor of London is Sadiq Khan, who's a Pakistani British guy like me. The Scottish guy, similarly, like, it's pretty incredible, actually, right? Like, that is a major, like, this is a country that for hundreds of years occupied India, and now you've got people that look like that from that background, you know, in very prominent positions. So again, like all these things, you can criticize, there's lots of really bad stuff they did, but also so did every empire, right?
No,
so
this is what I'm saying is, I love how you frame that, because similar things happen with me in terms of, I'm just speaking my old man more. And here's the thing, you have to, I love your perception of this with your dad or your mom or dad, parents in general. For everything that you can say that's negative about a country, I mean, Canada has its negativities too, right? It's got a lot of poor racial history. Particularly,
there's a meme coin for that too.
There's a meme there, right? Yeah. But like, dude, my old man's like, he's like, you don't understand. Like, East Asia is the most racist place in the world.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
You know what I mean? It's like, he's like, or South Asia is.
Yeah.
India literally has castes.
There's a literal
caste system.
No, and that's the thing. You can criticize both fairly, and it doesn't mean you hate everything. You could say, oh, this is wrong, and I think we move beyond it now. But that's a great way to put it. Like,
well, here, but you actually know the one of the lead stories in last week's Economist was actually how Britain is one of the top places in Europe now for integrating immigrants. And I think a big part of it is actually, I mean, South Asians, obviously a big part of the immigrant community, is, you're going to laugh, we brought up, bro, is the focus on education. It makes it so much easier to integrate, right? Mm. It's because you're boosting, you're contributing to the economy. Is like, I mean, it sounds very transactional, but here's the whole point. People are, look at any of these Southeast Asians or East Asian immigrants, they're happy. They are more than happy to contribute to the economy in exchange for citizenship. You know what I mean? It's like that trade-off for them and their family to have even a chance to advance. It's like, people understand. People that the most frustrating thing is to people is to talk to people that have never left, maybe call it England or North America, and hear them talk about, you know, racial and colonial histories and having never left the country. It's like, you have no idea. It's like, you just have no idea why people in these developing countries are clamoring to come over here, despite all the problems that, fair problems, despite all those problems, why is it that they're all trying to get here? Now, I don't want to lose track of the royal family question.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the privacy question then, because you know, we've talked about UK tabloids. We touched briefly with Beckham a couple months ago about the Beckham documentary. But UK is quite notorious, right? So I'll just ask a very pointed question. What is the expectation from your perception of privacy for the royal family?
Just my perception has been that they kind of have a special relationship with the press. And you see that in The Crown as well. Again, a lot of this I'm basing off The Crown and I haven't even watched the whole thing. But it did seem like, especially in the 90s and the kind of me growing up, I would see, it was like a very, it was easier to control the message because there's only a few newspapers and there's 4 or 5 TV channels. And they would basically have a wing in the palaces that would be a press office. It's the same way a company, like you said earlier, the firm, that is literally like a company has a PR team. And they literally will be the way you have a PR agency speaking to the press. Like, it's the same thing, right? And they'll be like, well, we'll give you access to Prince Charles and have an interview if you ask these questions. And it's just the same as any company. Like, do you think Sundar's going out to an interview?
Your former colleague at Google.
Exactly. Yeah. Friend of the pod would be like, oh, yeah, just ask me any question you want. No, they're going to say, give me these 5 questions. I'm going to have my PR people craft a response. So it's the same thing. It's just a little bit different when, you know, with the royal family, it's not like they were either elected officials or they were, you know, a free market company or something like that. So it's just a very unique thing. But the expectation now, I do feel like there isn't as much sympathy towards them because most people, even if you like the royal family, you still see them as, you know, they are privileged people. You know, they're rich. They, you know, they have taxpayer dollars go to them. And obviously they have historical money as well. So I think a lot of people will look at society and have that kind of very simplistic take and say, you don't have anything to complain about. And so whatever we want to know about you, the press can do what they want sort of thing. So there's a little bit of a weird thing there. But I don't really know because, again, I think it comes down to who you're asking that
to. Yeah, fair enough. I think what I would jump onto what you said is, so that question actually about how much money they receive from the from taxpayer dollars, I also flip flopped on that. I'm like, I used to feel like very negative about that because even I'm sure Canada's kicking up something, right? It's part of the Commonwealth, but the other side of the coin, which we're talking about, is this: the brand, that halo, you can put a dollar value on that, right?
Oh, it's definitely massive. Yeah. In terms tourism, of ROI, if you use it like that, you can definitely convince it. I think it's more, the question is always more about like, this, again, a politician would be like, should this go to schools and roads and hospitals, or should it go to people who are already living in a palace? So obviously, yeah, we're not here to debate that, but that's kind of the simplistic stuff you'll see talking about.
The last thing I'll add on, we should probably just put a bow on this convo, but going back to what we started with the Kate Middleton part is, I had actually, obviously, awful outcome, and I feel terrible for laughing at some of those memes. But I'll tell you I'll tell you something hysterical. Not hysterical. Well, it is hysterical, but terrible. When the Queen died, and you know Twitter don't give an F, the memes were Cardi B.
Oh, my God.
We joked.
There was the football song that I probably...
Cardi B wrote a tweet. He's like, I'm going to hell for how many tweets I liked today. And like, it's just so... I mean, we're talking about it. We don't care. NIA.
Yeah.
When this Diddy thing came out yesterday, for people who missed it. God. Diddy's house got raided.
Yeah.
I searched Diddy in the... And this is about sex trafficking people.
This is terrible.
I searched Diddy in the search timeline. It was literally 30 of... I'm just going to say it out. They were hysterical tweets.
Yeah, and objectively. I got ones from friends being like, yeah, I mean, literally, there's meme coins that are being created about it. I mean, 50 Cent is on Instagram wilding out for months.
We don't think this is funny.
No, of course, the content of what's happening in real life is terrible.
But you're turning it into a joke, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think part of this is, I think we can turn this back into the Kate Middleton conversation. In the sense of, what can we talk about? What can we joke about, right? And we've mentioned that I think the pendulum is swinging back way more towards like, listen, you can kind Money's of joke funny. About anything.
Right? Yeah, and intention like, matters there, yeah.
Right, and it's like, if you look at the top comedians in the world, they can spin yarn about anything and take any serious topic and just make it funny and you laugh about it. And to be honest, in like
That's how you process grief,
yeah,
man.
In tragic and shitty situations, you
That's
laugh.
Literally the only way.
That's
yeah.
it, right?
That's why I've always taken that position too, is because I know how much humor has helped me in bad times. And
yep.
And like similarly, obviously there's a difference between I'm laughing at someone being sick. Of course you're not. Like, you're not yeah. an evil person.
You're laughing at the laughing absurdity at of the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'll give you an example.
Exactly.
When the Kim Middleton posted that video to say that she was going through, she was doing chemo. And then there's just like, there's a collective, like, you could actually feel it looking at the timeline. Everybody's like, you know, their face
oh,
is like,
man,
oh,
yeah.
what have I done?
Like, oh, damn,
but like,
yeah.
The tweets that I actually like laughed out loud at was literally the ones of people deleting all their old tweets. It's like everybody on the X timeline deleted. It's because you're not laughing at Kate Middleton or having a laugh at her expense. You're laughing at the insanity of that entire situation.
Yeah.
And actually, if you actually stand back 50,000 foot, you know who's to blame? And Bilal kind of nailed it. The royal family has PR. They have professional people to liaise with the media. Where were they for the past 2 months while everybody's creating conspiracy theories,
that's interesting,
making
yeah.
profiles about a Prince William's side piece? Like apparently there's this really famous side piece that he's had. They let people run with that story. Where was the PR for this? Where was William standing y'all and putting his foot down and saying, this is insane? Why, where were these people? Right?
Yeah.
Where was the protection that she was deserved to have at this moment of her life? So when I look back, the reason
yeah,
I brought
so
this all
fair,
up
fair point,
is
yeah.
I'm saying her own team failed her. And UK media, it is bad. The tabloids, the expectations they have, they've taken it too far. But it is a game. And I'm looking at the people that should be protecting her, and they did it. And where the hell's William? Like, William hasn't come out and made a huge statement in her behalf, as far as I've seen.
Yeah.
So, like, that was my takeaway from all this, man.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I don't have much more to add. I think it was actually quite a good discussion on the whole Royal thing and bringing it together with the media side. So, good we talked about it. Anything else on that before we wrap up, man? This has been
no,
good.
I think that's good. We got pretty serious there at the end, but, like,
that was all good.
I think the key point Bilal said is a way to process shitty
situations. You got to laugh, man. That's yeah. all I can say as well. Yeah, that's... Listen, man, if you're not laughing, you're missing the whole point. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's literally,
exactly.
That is a philosopher called Lil Duval, if you heard of him. He's a comedian slash a guy who sings songs. No, he's an OG funny guy.
Bilal has brought out, let's end on this.
There we go.
I just want the listeners to know that Bilal brought out two pieces of philosophy today. Lil Duval and then the Indian jokes about Indian families having pictures of Princess Diana.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
man, I'll tell you what, very similar Respect. In Canada, like my mom, was obsessed with Princess
Oh,
Diana.
And she was, I mean, obsessed. What a legendary person. Like, she, yeah, again, we don't know her personally, but she, the things she did was incredible.
Very
right?
positive,
like,
yeah.
She'd go in the, and, yeah, a lot. And she just had, like, an incredible energy about her. But,
she
yeah,
used that platform, like...
For really good. Yeah, that's
well,
one of the best examples of, like, actually using your platform for good and raising awareness about stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, RIP. All right, man, this has been great. Thanks again for being here with us. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Drop us a little review on Apple or Spotify. If you're in the app right now, just open it up. Click the 5 stars.
Well, hit that 5-star on the Spotify, man. We always
appreciate
that.
Hit that. And we will see you guys next week. Hope you enjoy that. Cheers. Bye-bye.